One strike on Eaton with runners at the corners. And a fastball lined left field. That's going to drop. It's going to get past Quintino home. It's going to get Kyle Isbell all the way to third and into second base is Nate Eaton. And there's a big insurance run right there.
This is going to turn into a thing, isn't it?
What do you mean? What do you mean? A thing?
What, that I need to be aware every time Nate Eaton gets a hit because I trashed him on the radio.
No. No, that's not what that was. That's not what that was. That wasn't even, you know, that wasn't even last night. That was just, that was the last clip that was published on the Royals radio network on ABC News Files. I literally just typed Kansas City Royals to see if there was one, and I saw that, and I said, you know what, we're going to play that back. He didn't get a hit last night. He did drive in a run, though.
I was concerned about it.
He did drive in a run, though. Just a heads up. He did drive in a run. So the go-ahead run, it wasn't the go-ahead run. They put a five spot up in the second inning. Kansas City Royals pick up a win, 5-4 of the San Diego Padres. What's going on with the Padres? What do you think about that, Mark? Real quick.
I am really concerned about the Padres. I mean, you'd think that, I mean, they got four generational, or what, at least three generational talents out there. Soto, you know, I've watched him play a lot when I was at school in Maryland, and he was playing for Washington. I mean, this guy was great, but he's starting to fall off a little bit. He's turning into kind of a boomer bust hitter, hitting around 250. You know, he thought Bogaerts was going to be great. Tatis was going to be, you thought he'd be the X factor. He came back in the lineup, make a difference, but they just cannot, they can't hit. That's a surprise. Most people would look at that team and be why they struggle, and it must be the pitching. No, this team isn't hitting the ball. Jake Cronenworth's not hitting. Nobody's hitting for them. And, I mean, I don't know if they're going to be able to catch the Dodgers right now the way they're playing. I mean, I'd be able to catch the Diamondbacks the way they're playing.
Yeah, the Diamondbacks look really, really good. Hey, Brady Singer, great start again last night, though. Six innings, seven hits, two runs earned, two walks, three strikeouts, serviceable there. Arlotus Chapman comes in, gets an inning pitched, walks one, strikes out two. Taylor Clark, Scott Barlow with the save. There were some runs tacked on throughout those two unearned. The Padres lose 5-4. Kansas City picks up their 13th win of the year, and you're right. Look at this lineup. I mean, Fernando Tatis leading things off. Jake Cronenworth, Juan Soto, Xander Bogaerts, Matt Carpenter, Rougned Odor, Kim Ha-seong, Trent Grisham, Brett Sullivan, Nelson Cruz. Nelly's not hitting well. Adam Engel and Austin Nola. Like, that's a good lineup. A really, really good lineup. Seth Lugo only lasting two innings pitched last night. The bullpen has to come in and get some extra work. But you look at the Dodgers, you look at the Diamondbacks, who continue to do well. I think of the teams we talked about that are the biggest surprises, or were the biggest surprises, that we also expected to kind of fall off by the end of the year, or at least by the quarter point of this season. We've seen that happen with the Pirates. I probably would have put the Diamondbacks in that category, and they haven't. Credit the Diamondbacks. They haven't. I mean, they're 5-5 in their last 10, so they haven't been playing great overall baseball. But they've been staying afloat. They've got a four-game lead over the Padres in the wild card position. They lead the National League wild card, in fact, overall. And not a bad spot to be if you're an Arizona Diamondbacks fan. Also not a bad spot to be if you're a Miami Marlins fan. My boy, Jorge Soler, to run walk-off blast last night. And the entire division loses on a night where the Marlins win. So always happy to see that. But Miami going through some injury struggles of their own. I blessed the Cardinals last night and said they're going to win this division. And they lost the Brewers, unfortunately. But the Pirates continue to fall off. Cubs continue their skid. The Reds are just kind of hanging right there in the middle. Over in the American League last night, there was the big, I mean, this was two nights ago, but there was the big, what'd you make of the Aaron Judge looking over at the dugout situation, Mark?
I thought that was people reaching, to be honest. I don't know what he was doing.
Yeah, no,
I'll be honest, but I don't necessarily know. I don't think he's, you know, looking for trash can signals or anything like that, but I think that it was just, he moved his eyes over there. He was looking over there for some unknown reason. I don't know if it's because he was looking, one of his teammates was saying something. I mean, it was really weird. I mean, you never expect that mid pitch. Like, you want to be focused. So, I mean, it was a little weird, but I'm not going to put on the tinfoil hat here and be like, he's getting signals from the dugout, and that's why he hit all these home runs, because trust me, if he was doing it before, we would have found out last year when he hit 62.
Yeah, we would have, and it was different, but I think somebody said afterwards there was a fan heckling or somebody was saying something from one of the dugouts, supposedly, and then obviously last night there's the illegal substance on starting pitcher for the Yankees. I don't know. It's the Yankees.
They're that's been gonna, classic, though. Yeah, I mean, everyone classic. Knows that. Yeah. Michael Pineda.
Yep. There's always going to be a microscope underneath or on the Yankees and whatever they do, but I don't buy into it. I don't think anything super crazy was happening. There's just always going to be those types of conversations happening after something uncharacteristic happens at the plate, after what happened with the Houston Astros and the trash can gate or whatever. What was the official term? Was it trash gate or something like that?
I can't remember. Was it sign gate?
I don't know. There's got to be something gate. Like there always is. I just I don't know. I can't.
Yeah, there's always a gate. There's a flate gate, spy gate.
Yep. Yeah, there's always something. So anyway, let's bounce our way into the NBA, and we're going to start things off with the Nuggets taking down the Lakers last night, 132 to 126. Look, the end total score looks a little bit closer than this game really was, in my opinion. Nikola Jokic dominating, 34 points, 21 rebounds, 14 assists. Outstanding triple-double performance in the win. Anthony Davis, solid as always when he's healthy. 40 points, 10 rebounds. I think he's the best player on the Lakers. No slide of LeBron, but I think that this team goes as far as Anthony Davis can lead them, with LeBron being a complimentary piece alongside Anthony Davis when healthy. I thought this was interesting. You've seen this happen as the postseason has gone on for both of these teams. The bench has gotten less and less trust. Both teams only playing 8-man rotation. You're going to see that more and more, and that made me think, sustainability is the more minutes pile on as we get deeper and closer to the NBA Finals. Who do you trust more health-wise? For me, it comes down to the Denver Nuggets. It really does. Also, the Lakers were out-rebounded 47-30. Look, you can get away with that against the Golden State Warriors, a team that typically doesn't play very big. It's a lot of small ball. But when you've got a guy like Nikola Jokic downstairs, you have got to come better than that at the rim and rebound well, and that was always the conversation, right? The Lakers were able to defend the rim well and do things against the Warriors that helped them win that series. People thought maybe they could do the same thing against the Denver Nuggets. That's not going to be the case, and after last night, I'll say three-quarters of the way through is when I really stopped paying close attention to this game, Mark, and I feel even more affirmed in our prediction this one goes 4-2, 6 games, or even maybe 4-1 in 5 games.
Yeah, the thing about it is, I mean, where are you supposed to go if you're the Lakers from this? I mean, we've talked about inconsistency with Anthony Davis. You got the good guy, and you still lost. I mean, that was remarkable. I mean, AD showed up. A lot of guys showed up for the Lakers. They didn't play any defense, but they got the scoring. That's not there, and you still lost the ball game. So I think that's what's concerning if you're a Laker fan, because you're like, hey, man, we played pretty good, and we lost anyway, because I think that shows how good this Nuggets team is. You talked about the depth, certainly the case. They have players that can give them scoring off the bench consistently. It might not be the same amount every night, but you're going to get some kind of contribution from these players. Bruce Brown did a great job yesterday with his 16 points off the bench. I mean, but if you look at it for the most part, I mean, really only D'Angelo Russell and Dennis Schroeder played badly for the Lakers. And I mean, if your playoff success and or failure is going to be determined by what Schroeder's doing offensively, you're probably not going to win your series. And I do feel affirmed as well. The Nuggets were dominating this game. A lot of window dressing at the end by the Lakers. They had a big run to almost come back, but you know, the Nuggets doing what winners do, and Jokic doing what quality players do. Didn't take a page out of Embiid's book and not show up. Came in there, played well, and helped this team get a pivotal win. And I think that is going to be the key in this series. I don't expect Jokic to slow down. Don't expect Jamal Murray to slow down.
Best thing to happen to the Nuggets this year was Jokic not getting the MVP. What do you think?
It definitely helped. He's going to act like he doesn't care, because I really think that it doesn't matter in his heart. You see guys that don't get the MVP get that extra push. And now more people are talking about how well he's playing. Again, I'm not going to say Embiid didn't deserve it. He played well, had a great regular season. We can play how he played in the playoffs all you want, but it's a regular season award. And as much as there's everything everywhere, it was always up against Jokic to win it as a whole, just because it is very, 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 very hard to win three straight MVPs. It's only been done a couple of times in the history of the NBA. I think only Larry Bird and Will Chamberlain have done it. And there's always going to be kind of an extra bar he has to clear. It's not fair, but it's the way the world works. And that's part definitely helped Embiid in a way, even though this is probably the one that Jokic performed the best in. It's just he had enough competition or somebody that was worthy enough for voters to give it to Joel Embiid. But I mean, there's no doubt it's driving him a little bit, even if he doesn't want to admit it.
Yeah, I think it's a big factor as to how he's playing and it helping him out, because you saw how Embiid reacted. It can help, it can hurt, it can do a little bit of both, or you can kind of play somewhere down the middle. But I think overall, the Nuggets looked like the better team, even when they weren't playing their best. The Lakers played nearly a perfect game outside of on the glass and still couldn't find the win. I think this game, too, is very important for Denver. Give yourself a little bit of a cushion before heading to L.A. You never know what's going to happen with LeBron. It's hard to believe that the Denver Nuggets would beat the Los Angeles Lakers with LeBron James on their team. Like, that just doesn't, like, historically, that doesn't sound right. You know what I mean? That doesn't sound accurate. But I think in this case, it's going to happen. And what LeBron is doing now in year 20 is spectacular, incredible. But I just don't know if there is any team in the West that had the pieces to take down the Nuggets. Maybe the Warriors at full strength. I know that sounds silly. Well, the Lakers beat the Warriors. How can they not beat the Nuggets? But you look at matchups, you look at how the game's played. I really like the Nuggets here, and I think they're going to have a really, really strong chance with what I believe right now is the best player left in the playoffs, and Nikola Jokic. Cannot wait for game two. Can't wait for the rest of the series. We do have Celtics and Heat getting going tonight. That's going to be a ton of fun from Boston. But we're going to transition our way talking about the NBA draft lottery. Of course, the Spurs win the draft lottery. They own the rights to the number one overall pick. They had a 14% chance, tied for the third most or highest percentage coming in. They win. Victor Wembanyama, you are a San Antonio Spur. More than likely, I would almost say 99% chance you are a San Antonio Spur moving forward. We mentioned the top of the show. It is the third time all time the Spurs will select number one overall. The first time they got David Robinson, the Admiral, 1987. Then Tim Duncan followed his footsteps in 1997. They're 2 for 2 in first round picks with a Hall of Famer, and hoping to go 3 for 3 with the Frenchman Victor Wembanyama. The order goes as follows: Spurs, Hornets, Blazers, Rockets, and Pistons. The Pistons, the only one out of that group that fell farthest back. And remember, the Pistons had the number one overall pick with Cade Cunningham. They then went on and selected Jaden Ivey in the top five last year. And we had talked about this, Mark, but we felt like the Spurs were the best location. We predicted the Spurs. We just said that, you know, big men typically succeed there. You've got Greg Popovich, who, by the way, I found out is 74 years old. I know Pop was talking about retiring, but I really believe he just might not. I think he might just coach until he can't coach literally anymore. I think that he'll continue to power his way through. And with Wembanyama, I think they're going to be a playoff team. I really do. They've had two former Frenchmen that were really, really good players in the NBA, Boris Diaw and Tony Parker. So they know French very well. They made a joke yesterday that they won't need to get a translator. They won't. They simply won't. They know French culture, and they have a very good understanding with the international circuit in the NBA and then the players that are overseas because of the foundation that Diaw, Tony Parker have laid down. And we knew this made the most sense, but seeing it come together, I think this provides the best way for Wemby to not turn into a bust. Everyone, you know, there's either he's a generational talent or he's too skinny, too tall, he's going to break down and not be able to play or not be able to do what he needs to do. But this is a prospect that I've known of for about a year and a half. We were talking about this all the way back in August and September. And like I said, I believe this situation, and we kind of alluded to this yesterday, is the best for him to succeed in a career-long setting versus going to some place like the Pistons or maybe the Rockets or even the Hornets, maybe lesser those two last ones. But the Blazers would have been another nice destination. I think he would have had a good career with the Blazers. But the Pistons, Rockets, I mean, you go to those teams, you're going to be must-see TV, but you're going to be right back in the lottery next year.
I think that it's great that he went to the Spurs. I know that fans are upset just because, like, how much more luck do they need? I'm sick and tired of the Spurs always getting the pick right after they stink for the first year. It seems like right when the Spurs totally nosedive, they managed to get the first pick in the draft. They did when they got Tim Duncan after David Robinson got hurt, and they didn't perform all that well. They were able to get Tim Duncan, and they were able to pretty much seamlessly transition between those two guys. And, I mean, here we go again. Another guy that has a lot of talent. I think that it's great that he's going to the Spurs just because they have track records of developing guys. If you look at the Pistons, if you look at the Rockets, I mean, who have they developed? Like, here's a question for you. Who's your favorite drafted and developed Piston? Like, you have one answer. That's Isaiah Thomas. It's like, okay, they did it once 30 years ago. Because outside of that, I mean, even the players on their 04 championship team, they weren't drafted players except for Tayshaun Prince. None of those guys came here. Chauncey Billups was drafted by the Celtics, and Rip Hamilton by the Wizards, and Rasheed Wallace by the Bullets. So it's a lot of negativity when you look at that from a Pistons standpoint, the same way with the Rockets. Now, again, this is rickety logic that you're talking about. Hey, I mean, some of these teams haven't picked high. Like, if you look at the Rockets, it's like, well, they haven't picked in the top 10 in two decades because every year they trade their picks. They traded their picks for James Harden, and they traded him again for Russell Westbrook. So there wasn't a lot of times where they were drafting high, but, I mean, outside of Yao Ming and my guy, former Terp Steve Francis, who technically they didn't draft, but they traded for on draft day, so it counts. I mean, those are the only two guys that they've really developed into great players. And even Francis, you know, that kind of him a little bit. But you look at all that, you want them to go to the Spurs. I mean, there's a laundry list of Spurs that have been drafted and developed by the Spurs that are great players, walking Hall of Famers, Robinson, Duncan, Parker, Ginobili, Kawhi. I mean, and that's just in the last 30 years, as opposed to these other guys like the Rockets and the Pistons, who you got, what, three guys that you can realistically name that were Hall of Famers in the last 30 years. So, again, sort of rickety, but you see where I'm going with it. You want to go to a team you can play. And it's definitely going to be different for Wembanyama just because you're talking about David Robinson, Tim Duncan. These are guys that are like head in the sand, players worry about basketball, and that's it. I mean, what people used to make fun of Tim Duncan because he would wear jeans and polos to games. I mean, he was just very, very down to earth, that type of guy. I mean, I'd definitely be a little bit different than that. We'll see how Pop deals with that because he's not going to be someone who may dive headfirst under his authority, very straight to start as a young kid, and he's been told from the day he started playing basketball here recently that he's the best player out there. He's going to be great. He's going to be, I mean, I think Woj called him yesterday, Adrian Wojnarowski called him the greatest prospect in the history of team sports. I mean, that's putting him up there with names like LeBron, Connor McDavid, and these guys that were next level immediate contributors. That puts a lot of pressure on a kid at his age. You got to go out there and be like, okay, if I don't average 25 points and 10 rebounds while making 5 threes a night my first year, that people are going to be putting questions on him. I think that being in an environment like the Spurs and an organization that knows basketball like the Spurs and is coached by Greg Popovich can help the young man navigate those roadblocks in his career and help turn him towards being the player that everyone knows that he can be.
No, you're right. I know you said it's a little rickety, but it's not. It really isn't. Look back at those teams we just mentioned and you just talked about. Good teams develop their players, and they don't pick often in the top 10. There's a reason. Good teams, not necessarily good teams, but good organizations. And I think that's wonderfully put because players often dive into these leagues or dive into these teams, and how much better do they get from their time there or at that first stop from where they were when they came from college or came from overseas? A lot of times it's not that different. I think of a guy, Andrew Wiggins, right? He's good with the Timberwolves, great, whatever. And then he goes to the Warriors and kind of has a career renaissance, right? You see that. You know, D'Angelo Russell, a little bit of that. He made a couple of different stops from L.A. Lonzo Ball, also another example of that. The Lakers have developed guys. I'm not trying to pick on the Lakers, but there's just a couple of players that, you know, I'm thinking of in my head that have gone to organizations to start, haven't been that great. They get traded. They don't get their option picked up. They end up on a different team, maybe for a more team-friendly deal, so they're on a better team, an organization that has shown an ability to have good coaching, develop good players, and they have that career renaissance, and you're like, well, this guy always had it. He was a good. He was a top overall pick, and it's like, yeah, he was, but he was on a team that he wasn't put in a position to succeed. We see that all the time. Domas Sabonis, when he got traded from the Pacers, or to the Pacers originally from the Thunder to the Pacers. Like, he didn't do a whole lot. He was fine. His rookie season, he was fine. And then he gets to Indiana. He develops into a star player. He goes to Sacramento, continues that trend, and he plays very well. So, like, there are so many examples of that. And that's why I think that this is the better way for this to shake out for Wembanyama's long-term success, I think for the league's success as a whole. And I can't wait to see what this follows with and how this draft goes, because it's not just about Wembanyama. It is, but it's not just about that. There are great players in this draft. This is a really, really good draft that historically could go down as a league-changing draft, not just because of Wembanyama at the top. Brandon Miller, small forward from Alabama. Scoot Henderson, a point guard who plays for the G League Ignite team. And Amen Thompson, Asir Thompson as well. Cam Whitmore. All these guys are really, really solid. Grady Dick, even, from KU, could be a top 10 player in this upcoming draft. There are good, good players up and down this draft that are going to impact the NBA for some time coming. And I think that that's why this draft is so talked about, not just because of the number one overall pick, but because of the impact it's going to have long term. Real quick, as we wrap up this conversation, Mark, get ready to close things out in just a little bit. Are there any other guys in this draft, maybe some of the names I mentioned that you kind of watched closely or thought about as a good number two through, let's say, top 10, two through the 10 range that teams could add?
I'm a real big believer in Scoot Henderson. I mean, this guy looks like he could play linebacker in the NFL. He's 6'2", and just massive. I mean, it's going to be tough to cut this guy going down the lane. If he's got what he develops ability to shoot from the outside, I mean, he can be a really, really effective, just all-around scoring guard. I don't know where he's going to go, though. That's my biggest thing with Scoot. I don't think that the draft lottery was kind to him, because if you look at 2-3, I mean – There's some issues with, you know, those guys have guards. They have scoring guards. They have LaMelo Ball, and they have Damian Lillard. Are you going to bring in another two-guard look? Because, I mean, those are disasters to me. I'm sorry. Look, it's hard to have two guys that need the ball, that want to run the offense, playing on the same team. And, you know, I mean, I don't know if LaMelo and Scoot can share the floor. I don't think Damian Scoot can share the floor either. So I think he may drop to 4 and end up with Houston and just kind of be the center of what they're trying to do down there. They have some other players as well that are down there. But, I mean, I think that he needs to be in a situation where he can lead that offense. He can be the guard. He can be the ball handler and be the scorer. And I don't think that's going to work effectively in Charlotte or Portland, because they have already ball-dominant scoring guards. But I really like his skill set.